It's just 100 years since the Titanic disaster, an event that shows no sign of being forgotten.
On the Titanic, you have poor people, rich people. It's the biggest ship in the world, is the highest technology. Everything is concentrated on this ship.
Is that the reason why, 100 years on, the Titanic continues to fascinate? Well, it was the explanation given to Swiss Radio International, Swiss Info's radio predecessor, back in 1998 by Frenchman Paul-Henri Nargiolet, one of the first divers to see the Titanic wreck after its discovery in 1985. It was just before midnight on April the 14th, 1912, that the giant liner on its maiden voyage collided with an iceberg in the North Atlantic and went down with a loss of 1,500 lives. There were Swiss among both the passengers and crew. Some were rich, some were poor. Some survived, some didn't. One of the classic accounts of the sinking called it a night to remember. So it was for adults, perhaps. But not for Zurich-born Louise Gretchen Kink, who had turned four only a few days earlier, and who was travelling with her father Anton and her mother, also called Louise, to start a new life in America. I spoke to her daughter, Joan Randall, who was taking part in a centenary cruise to the site of the sinking.
She lost her memory from the time until she was in school, she says, that her first memories were memories in school. So she had no memories of Zurich, of the ship, of the disaster, of anything. However, she had terrible nightmares.
The Kink family were lucky. Daughter, mother, and father all survived. But Anton Kink's brother and sister were drowned, as was a friend they were travelling with, a farmer from Uster near Zurich. As emigrants, the Kinks were travelling third class, and it was third class passengers that suffered by far the highest proportion of losses. Three quarters of them perished. In first class, it was only 40%. The Kinks are thought to be the only complete family from third class to have made it. That's because, in all classes, priority was given to women and children. A letter written by Anton Kink to the Basel travel agency Kaiser & Co., which had sold him the tickets, has recently come to light, an extract published in the Sonntagszeitung newspaper. He actually wrote the letter to ask about the chance for compensation. The paper doesn't say whether he got it. But it stretches to 20 pages and contains a detailed account of the events. So we know just how he managed to get into the lifeboat.
A sailor pressed his fist to my chest and said I should stay behind. I didn't challenge him. There was nothing to be gained by annoying him. Instead, I sneaked past when he was distracted.
But before anyone condemns him for taking someone else's place or putting lives in danger, that boat, like so many others, left only half full. With room for 40, there were only 18 people in it. Like the other survivors, they were eventually picked up by the Carpathia, the only ship to alter its course in response to the Titanic's distress signals. It wasn't much fun.
We were served in such a beastly manner that we were disgusted when we saw the food, and we counted the hours until our arrival in New York. On the last evening, the waiters began fighting and we had to flee to avoid being punched.
Another Swiss who got away was 24-year-old Emma Segesser of Aarwangen in Canton Bern. She was travelling first class, not because she was rich, but because she was the lady's maid to Ninette Aubard, the mistress of a wealthy American businessman, Benjamin Guggenheim. She spoke to Swiss Radio in 1937.
We felt a sharp jolt. The steward came along and knocked at the door and said we should get our money and jewels. He took down the lifebelts and said we should hurry. There wasn't any panic among the people. They were all calm. No one would realize that anything had happened. Then we were lowered over. There were quite a lot of waves coming from the big ship. The sailors had to hurry to make sure we got away.
She and her mistress made it. Guggenheim didn't. In parting from the women on the boat deck, it seems he did not at first realise how serious matters were. He had words of comfort for Segesser.
We will soon see each other again. It's just a repair. Tomorrow, the Titanic will go on again.
The two women returned to Europe at the beginning of May. Segesser soon went back to Switzerland, where she eventually moved to Zurich, got married, and ran a cigar shop with her husband. She died in 1964. Also travelling in first class were Max Stehlin Meglin and Alfons Simonius Blumer, both of them from the Swiss Bank Corporation, which eventually ended up merging with the UBS Bank, but that's a different story. Their mission was very different from that of Emma Zegesser. They were hot on the heels of a German-American businessman, Arnold Heiner, who was suspected of absconding to New York with a large amount of money after going bankrupt in Switzerland. On the evening of April the 14th, they'd been playing cards with the Swiss silk manufacturer Max Fröhlicher-Stehli, another survivor, and all three had just gone to their cabins for the night when the collision occurred. They went out to see what had happened. Like most of the other passengers, at first they thought it was a minor event. Nevertheless, both Stehlin and Simonius went back to their cabins to fetch the bank's accounts books. Stehlin described what happened next.
When we got on deck, we found a lot of women already in the lifeboats, but very little commotion. Indeed, there were quite a lot of women who didn't want to get into them, so there were a lot of free places. When Simonius and I saw this, we got into one of the emptiest boats, although we were not yet at all worried, since the Titanic appeared completely safe. There was still music playing, and the crew were behaving in a very disciplined way, even if they couldn't hide their anxiety.
Like the boat the third-class Kinks escaped in, their lifeboat was not full. They, too, were picked up by the Carpathia, as it happened, the very ship which had taken their quarry, Heiner, to New York a few days earlier. In the event, it seems that they tracked down Heiner when they arrived in America, but for whatever reason, and it's not clear why, they did not pursue charges.